Help wanted almost everywhere. Ask just about any business leader in Maine about the biggest issue in the state, and they are likely to answer the labor shortage. It is a problem that affects many sectors, from healthcare to manufacturing, education to tourism. This summer, many Maine tourist-related businesses have either trimmed their hours or shut their doors because they can't find enough workers, including the Maine Hudson Trails, which closed half of its overnight lodges for the summer. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Experts say Maine's labor shortage is the result of a number of factors, including low unemployment and an aging workforce. Today, we'll talk with state leaders about efforts to tackle this problem. And we want to hear from you. What solutions do you see for finding enough people for the jobs available in Maine? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Normally, low unemployment rates are a good thing. But when it comes to tourist season and a state that counts on its hospitality industry for a good deal of its tax revenue, a labor shortage can have severe consequences. Today, we're going to learn more about Maine's labor shortage and what, if anything, can be done to address it. Joining me in the studio, Amanda Rector. She is the Maine State Economist. Laura Fortman is also with us. She's Commissioner of Maine's Department of Labor. And Steve Hewins is President and CEO of Hospitality Maine. As always, we want to hear from you. What do you think the state can do to attract more workers? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. You know, this is not the first time we've done some version of this conversation. Amanda, you and I have talked about the labor shortage before. I know, Steve, you and I have talked about its impact on tourism. But this summer seems to be especially severe. Is that the case? Is that what you're seeing in the hospitality industry, that this summer things are happening that weren't happening before?
Well, yes, I do think that. And I think it's really the result of 10 years of unbroken growth in the industry, you know, going back to the Great Recession, let's say back in 07, or actually 09, beginning in 09 through this year, we've set annual records in hotel and restaurant revenue. And as that continues to grow, I think the workforce has remained mostly flat during that period. So we just reached a point where I think in order to continue the growth, or at least even to maintain what we have, we need more workers, and we're at that point where we don't have it.
For hospitality alone, how many more people would it take to have every restaurant, every inn, every campground open as much as they would like to be?
Well, that number is going to be hard to get at, except that last fall we had the University of Maine do a study for us, and they identified over 4,000 open positions in the state, like that aren't filled and
just in hospitality.
Just in hospitality, restaurants and hotels across the state.
Okay, Laura, I'm going to turn to you. 4,000 in hospitality. What's the bigger number if you include all the other places that want to have workers?
Well, I don't know that we can put an exact number on that, Jennifer. But as Steve said, one of the things, the good news is that the businesses have been growing. I think a lot of times we hear about the fact that we have more deaths than births in Maine. But Amanda, I know you've just recently released some numbers that show that we've actually seen an increase in our population. So I do want to point out that that is positive. We are seeing in migration. I don't think that we have a quick solution to filling those positions, but I think that just as it took us 8-10 years to get to where we're at, we're going to have to invest some time and working together to make sure that we can have the talented group of people that we need to have in place to grow all of the businesses in the state.
And when you say in migration, that means people are moving here.
Yes, they are. In about a 10-year period, we've had about 10,000 people move to the state of Maine. So I think that that does demonstrate that we are a place that it is good to live, to work, to raise your family in.
All right, Amanda, give us some of the economic foundation for why we are where we are. I know there are multiple sort of factors coming together.
Sure. So we've sort of spent a long time getting to this point. Certainly the demographic situation is a good piece of it. So we have the largest share of baby boomers in our population of any state in the U.S. And on top of that, as of course those baby boomers have been aging, that means that we've had the oldest median age for a number of years now. We just passed Florida as the percent of 65 and older being first in the nation for that percentage. So more and more of our population is moving into later working years and into retirement, and we don't have the population following behind to pick up. As Commissioner Fortman mentioned, we do have some good news on that front in that we have seen an uptick in migration the past couple of years. And if we break that down, the age cohort that we've been seeing a lot of in-migration from is in the 25 to 35 age, which is terrific news, except that we need that even more so. And we need that spread out across the state further. And we need to continue to see that migration to the state over a number of years to sort of keep up with the baby boomers moving into their retirement years.
And we talk about the number, whether it's the median age being 44 or more 65 and older than any other state per capita in the nation, but it's not the same throughout the state of Maine, is it? County by
That's
county,
right.
Big variation.
Yes, and certainly a lot of the in-migration recently has been to the southern part of the state. So a lot of what we need to see is further migration into other parts of the state. We have seen in the most recent year the migration spreading a little bit further afield, but those parts of the state that are more rural, we think of them as the Rim counties, sort of the parts of Maine that are around the Canadian border. They've had a much harder time. A lot of the median ages there are considerably higher. Piscataquis County has the highest median age in the state. It's up over 50 years. And they really need to see additional migration into those parts of the state to help with the labor force shortages that are going on there.
So we've got a combination of businesses are growing,
mm-hmm.
unemployment is low, we have an older state. Am I missing some other factors?
Yeah. You know, I think those are some of the important ones. I think that there are two things that are going on. One is that we are seeing an almost universal workforce crunch now, where it's year-round businesses as well as seasonal businesses. I think there are some additional issues, particularly for the summer tourism season, where businesses are facing additional challenges related to, for example, the fact that a lot of the high schoolers who used to go and scoop ice cream over the summer, like I did, they're now engaging in more extracurriculars or doing more college prep work, which is good, but it means that the businesses that used to rely on them are now even more shorthanded.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, Steve, we know, we've documented, there are restaurants that have closed their doors because they can't get the help they need. Maine Hudson Trails has closed half of its lodges. There are hotels I know that maybe have closed wings. What do we think is being lost? What could Maine be bringing into its economy?
Well, I mean, clearly when we reduce the amount of hours that restaurants open or the amount of rooms available for rent, there goes the tax implications of that too. You know, those are rooms and seats in restaurants that could be filled, but aren't. So it's affecting, you know, the restaurants and the hotel's revenue, but it's also affecting the state's, you know, lodging and meal taxes as well. I think that we are reaching out to new groups. We're going to need to reach out to everybody to try to gain full employment. I can speak for hospitality from that sector. Retired folks coming back into the workforce, people that used to be a waiter or server might want to come back and work some hours. I think that, disaffected groups like we're working with. I've spoken in several prisons in Maine to try to start some pre-apprentice programs inside the prisons. Our workforce initiatives are focused around that, and immigrants as well, new Americans. So we have to reach around the edges of what's out there as well. In the end, we'd love to have people move here for hospitality. I think we'd have to home grow our own employees to some degree. And so that really starts working in middle school through high school and educating people on the opportunities in the industry.
Laura, you're nodding.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those are the strategies that we're trying to use statewide. And Steve just mentioned some of the populations. This is an incredible opportunity to re-engage folks who've been left on the margins before, whether it's people with disabilities. We still have a very high unemployment rate for people with disabilities. We're doing some great work with folks with helping them do progressive employment so that you can come in, you can try things out, see if it's a good fit, and move on. Steve mentioned the apprenticeship program, and we're partnering on that as well. I think that this does give us a chance to work collaboratively with businesses and with education as well as with government. You know, as we've said a couple of times already, it took us a long time to get here, and it's going to take all of us working together so that we have a future that is really vibrant.
You mentioned people with disabilities. Isn't part of the problem is that if you're on disability, you can't work? Is there any way to change that law and make it work better for people who might be able to work, but not 40 hours a week doing something physical?
Right. There are programs that actually do take that into consideration. One of them is the Ticket to Work program. And we partner with benefits counselors so that they can help people understand what their options are and to preserve their benefits as they do go to work. But we're also reaching into the high schools because we want to raise the aspirations of young people with disabilities so that they see a future for themselves in the workforce. And again, that requires partnering with employers who are willing to look at things a little bit differently and take a chance on someone that maybe 5 or 10 years ago they might not have considered for employment. But if we can provide the appropriate supports and coaching, that it could be a good fit for the employer as well as for the worker.
Amanda, how much of the issue is a combination of affordability of housing in places like Portland and lack of public transportation? That there are people who would love to work in, say, coastal tourism industry, but don't live on the coast, can't afford to drive an hour and a half both directions, and can't afford to move there.
Yeah, you know, I think that really is one of the things that we need to look at and address is what are the barriers that are preventing people from either moving into the state or taking employment in certain areas in the state. And I do think that certainly housing, not just affordability, but availability too. I mean, if you look at the Mid-Coast area, the availability of rental properties there, particularly during the summer, they're hard to come by, and because everybody wants to be there in the summer. And so it's very, very hard for people to find a place to stay. And then on top of that, the challenge of finding childcare, particularly if you are working in something like a hospitality industry where they have unusual hours that are not sort of the standard 8 to 5:30 of a childcare center, finding childcare outside of those hours is incredibly difficult. So I think that's another piece. And I think there are some places where we know what the barriers are and we haven't yet figured out exactly how to solve them. And I think there are probably some areas where we don't yet know what all of the barriers are. So I think we still have some research to do to figure out, okay, what are all of the pieces? I think a lot of it is going to require creativity, particularly with working together, because it's going to be those partnerships between all of the different sectors, because we're all in this together.
Well, let's talk about creativity, Steve. What are you hearing in your industry? Are people doing creative things to be able to have enough employees? I mean, are folks building dorms on their property, like that?
There are many strategies being implemented. You know, we talk about places like Bar Harbor as an example. There's a lot of big hotels there, and they bring in a lot of summer workers, both foreign temporary workers and people in Maine. And to house them, some of them are buying bed and breakfasts, converting them into dorms. Traditional bed and breakfast buildings, you know, that have been operated for many times decades are now being converted to housing. And I think that, you know, the tourism industry is both benefits and hurts this whole sector too, because you've got a lot of like Airbnb as an example. We don't talk about the removal of housing stock from by people renting their house through Airbnb, but that is a major factor in a lot of the coastal communities and taking you know, workforce housing away because of that. And you can understand to some degree because people presumably can make more money doing that, people that own the properties, but it still creates the problem for where people can live and still work and fill the needs that are, you know, there.
I was thinking this morning as I drove into work and was thinking about this topic that historically, you know, industries have recruited people not only from other states but other countries. You know, you think of the railroads built with people, you know, the railroad companies at the turn of the century or before the turn of the century went to China and advertised and brought people over. My grandfather came from England. He was recruited because he was a dye maker. Folks came to the mills in Maine from other places because there was work here. Is there anything like that going on in today's world? Is there active, sort of like old-fashioned, going somewhere else and putting notices on bulletin boards in the modern way?
Well, and I think Steve and I are just kind of looking at each other because there is a federal program. It's called the H-2B program, and it has caps on the number of foreign workers who are able to come in. The cap was reached well before Maine. Employers were able to access it. And then there was another batch of 30,000 visas that were granted. So addressing immigration law is also a piece of this because you can't bring people.
Sure, but H-2Bs are temporary, right? These are temporary. But I'm thinking about recruiting efforts to get people to move where you are.
I think that still gets back to the whole immigration issue and how many people are allowed to immigrate and the restrictions that are put on folks and where they're going to be coming from. And there's a lot in flux right now on the federal level.
I also think I would add to the commissioner's comments there about relative to identifying the sectors that we would like to promote outside of Maine. You know, one of the things is that, forgetting about hospitality for a second, if you're trying to import workers into the state, you know, you have to have, what are you selling them? We have a quality of life, which is certainly an exceptional asset. But, you know, what are the sectors that we can grow over the next, say, 10 years, you know, so that we, like, say, biopharmaceuticals, as an example, marine aquaculture, you know, then we can go out and sell something, come here for our, you know, excellent opportunities in this industry or that industry, and don't think of Maine just for, you know, beautiful coastline and trees and, you know, and that sort of thing. So we sort of have to change our brand is really strong in tourism, but we have to kind of tweak the brand if we're going to bring people living here in.
And there are other states with a higher unemployment rate. Are we trying to recruit from them?
I think our goal really is we know that we need more people here. I think one of the ways that we've been reaching out to folks is people who have an existing connection to the state. It's often an easier sell because they already know how wonderful Maine is. And so it's easier to go out and say, hey, you want to come back here? We've got lots of jobs. I do think that we need to do more. And I do think that it's, you know, in situations where we have people who have come here, finding ways to link them into employment opportunities as quickly as possible, whether it's folks who maybe they came here with a partner or a spouse who has a job and they're looking for something, or if it's the asylum seekers who have arrived here as well. If any of those folks who have arrived in the state, we need to do a really good job of, as quickly as possible, plugging them into the available opportunities.
And I think with the asylum seekers, there are some challenges because they're not permitted to work for a certain period of time. But the other thing is getting back to the making Maine a welcoming state so that people want to come here, know that they're going to be welcome here, and that, as Steve said, that there are good career opportunities for folks as well. And again, it will require all of us doing that kind of work together. But sometimes, just as it's easier to take a business that's here and grow it, it's also easier, as Amanda said, to have people who have some positive view of the state to attract them here.
We have so many calls coming in. We're eager to hear from all of you. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about Maine's labor shortage. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Theater at Monmouth, with Ken Ludwig's Baskerville, a Sherlock Holmes mystery, now through August 15th. Tickets at theateratmonmouth.org.
The U.S. military is considered the most powerful in the world, with a caveat.
A long list from the F-35 to Patriot missiles are all hackable. So we go to war, and the enemy pushes the button, and none of our weapons work.
I'm Ari Shapiro. The vulnerabilities and capabilities of American cybersecurity this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. The next stop on the Maine Public News Tell Me More tour is Millinocket, as Maine Public News travels the state to hear directly from you, learn what you feel are the most important issues in your community, and how Maine Public News can best serve you and keep you informed. The event takes place this Thursday at the North Light Gallery Annex at 256 Penobscot Ave, starting at 2 o'clock, immediately following a live Maine Calling on the Road with Jennifer Rooks, which starts at 1 o'clock sharp. For more information about all the Tell Me More tour visits, including Thursday's Millinocket event, please visit mainepublic.org and click on Events or the banner ad.
Right, right.
Because they're, for the grace of God, does not go a lot of our employees.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, what to do about the state's labor shortage. Joining me in our Augusta studio, Laura Fortman, Maine's Labor Commissioner, Amanda Rector, Maine's State Economist, and Steve Hewins, President and CEO of Hospitality Maine. We want you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Facebook page. On the line with us now is Michelle Corey. She and her husband own the restaurant 555 and Petite Jacqueline. Michelle, thanks for giving us a call.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
How is your staffing situation this summer and how does it compare to years past?
We're looking pretty good this summer. Honestly, it's a, you know, a reoccurring problem. It seems to be a big issue right now. I can only really speak for my companies. I think it's the same thing every summer. I guess it is bad, but for us, not particularly bad. You know, you have the same problem with having a soft April, May, and June, and then you need to gear up. And by the time you're ready to gear up, everyone else is opening, and we're all competing for the same limited number of skilled workers. So, I suppose it's worse. Unemployment is lower. So, you know, it's probably a worse problem. The visas are an issue. It's for us, it's more of a stability issue. You know, you think you have it done, somebody moves, goes away, and you're reshuffling the deck every couple of weeks. So that's always a challenge. We had a very strong April, May, and June, which allowed us to keep our staff very happy, so that, you know, we lucked out in that way.
What do you think needs to be done to address the workforce shortage in Maine?
Big issues, right? I think housing is a huge problem. I'm not exactly sure that, you know, housing and transportation combined. I think there was an article in the Pro-Press Herald today as well. I think, you know, there's limited space in the city. Obviously, it's a peninsula, right? So there's always going to be limited space. Summer, for us, we have the unique problem of having a summertime issue. When everyone wants to come to the state, we need to find housing, so it's quite expensive. I don't think we can attract workers if we can't get them housing or transportation. I think taxes are a big issue. I have a lot of people that come, even young kids that, you know, it's not a wealthy issue. We come from out of state and they look at their pay stubs and they come to me and they say, is this really the taxes that are coming out? And, you know, comparatively to other states, it's huge. And I think that's a big problem of keeping people here. I was just listening to the last couple of minutes. I mean, we have to figure out a way to attract people to Maine. The unemployment is low everywhere. We're competing with other states. We're competing with other industries. I have a lot of people that are leaving the industry entirely because, you know, we're all competing for the same people. The population isn't growing. I think things like the apprenticeship program, I don't know if Steve was able to talk about that. I think that's, you know, a huge bonus, trying to get people to look at the hospitality industry specifically as a career opportunity and a and changing the language on that. And then I think we need to, you just said it, so I don't want to reiterate it, but, you know, attracting people to here with career opportunity and jobs, which is, I think, what we're lacking right now.
Well, Michelle, thanks so much for calling in. It's Michelle Corey. She and her husband are co-owners of the restaurants 555 and Petite Jacqueline. Steve, she talked about apprentice programs. I know that there are many throughout the state. We've done a main calling on them. What is she talking about specifically, though, when she says the apprentice program?
Well, apprentices are basically employees that are learning both on the job and in the classroom at the same time. So when they graduate the program, they receive a credential, recognizing them, in our case, either as a line cook apprentice or a hospitality services apprentice. The key with that, though, is that they have to be hired. And it's a real partnership with labor, the Department of Labor, and state government. Education, you know, like the community college system, namely in our case. So you've got this three-legged stool that it doesn't work unless we're all aligned together. So we have the Department of Labor basically awarding the certificates, and we're sourcing all the students and the locations for them to work. In our case, we have 32 businesses now that are available for apprenticeships, and now we're looking to find those employees now to go in there.
Joining us now, Kim Verault. She's Executive Director of the Old Orchard Beach Chamber of Commerce. Kim, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can you characterize how this season is compared to seasons past as far as the people in Old Orchard Beach, the businesses finding the employees they need?
Sure. Although our area is enjoying a really strong season, businesses continue to struggle with a workforce shortage. For many, coupled with the increase in minimum wage, it's been a huge challenge.
Would you say that it's worse than years past?
I would say that the worker shortage in our area is getting increasingly worse. Businesses are having to resort to more extreme measures to keep their doors open. We're finding that restaurants that would typically prefer to stay open 6 or 7 days a week are having to close 1 or 2 days. A perfect example of this is Duffy's Restaurant in both Kennebunk and Old Orchard. Recently, when speaking with David Clough, owner of Duffy's, he stated that he's one employee away from closing a day. He's also had to eliminate breakfast altogether and only serve lunch on Saturdays and Sundays. And he's currently having to utilize one of his full-time Kennebunk cooks to work in Old Orchard on an overtime basis in order to survive and get through the season. There's, in addition, a large employee shortage within the hotel industry. One of our largest employers in the area is the Lafayette Group. And here in Old Orchard alone, they have 3 hotels, a gift shop, and during the height of the season, they employ about 125 people. This year, 60 of their employees are J-1 international students, and about 15 are H-2B employees. Once the end of August hits, they're going to be down to a skeleton crew of about 30 employees during a time when, in September and October, we've seen increasingly busier times over the past 5 to 7 years. And for them, having a skeleton crew in the fall means having to take rentable rooms offline because they won't be able to clean or maintain them.
Mm. Well, Kim, thanks so much for calling in today. That's Kim Verault, the Executive Director of the Old Orchard Beach Chamber of Commerce. And the story she tells is repeated through whole bunch of tourist communities in the coast and on the lakes. We're going to go to Jeff, who's calling from Green. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing? I'm Jeff.
Good. Go ahead.
Okay. Hi, I'm Jeff. I'm 53. I'm from Green. I have a degree in leadership and org studies. And I want to come from the other direction here. And I really don't think Maine's job market is as good as or is as bad as claimed. And I want to bring up a few issues here for the folks to chew on. Number one, I can attest to myself, I've been out of work a year now. I'm a degreed professional. and I have run into rampant age discrimination in trying to restart my career here. There's a running joke between my 15-year-old son and myself as to who's going to get the first U-Haul out of here. My observations, I work
Jeff,
with
how,
number, yeah.
Jeff, let me ask you a question. You say age discrimination.
Yeah.
Are people saying things to you outright that make you believe that? And if so, what have you heard?
Well, there've been a number of things in my interviews. You know, you have a lot of experience, maybe more experience than is required for this job. I've run into four psychological, quote-unquote, assessments that directly asked me my age. My understanding was that was illegal. And you know, that's just been my experience. I get there, everything comes through, everything's great, I'm great until I get the interview. And then they take one look at me and, oh, yeah, he's older than what we want to hire. And the reason I want to bring that up, a recent article in the New York Times said this had reached epidemic proportions, that the average folks over my age and older, average job gap between jobs is 15 months, with a lot of us never getting reemployed.
Yeah, Jeff, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you bringing this up. I want to bring in our experts here. Laura Fortman, this is your department. I mean, we ought not to be seeing this.
No, we shouldn't. And anyone over age 40 should be protected from age discrimination. The Maine Department of Labor is not the agency that oversees that. It's the Human Rights Commission. But the Department of Labor does have programs where we are specifically working with older workers. And I would encourage Jeff to reach out to us so that we can work with him on how to look at his resume and maybe do some mock interviews and try to help him land a job. That is one of the populations that, as you know, Steve started this out by talking about some older workers. I think at this moment in time, employers are much more willing to bring older workers in, especially if they're looking, folks may be looking for part-time employment, and people are much more willing to look at their schedules around part-time and other kind of creative ways of meeting that workforce.
That was going to be one of my questions. Do employers need to possibly rethink the way they employ people instead of saying, I don't want someone if they can't work full time, thinking, well, if somebody is willing to work part time, I'm going to change the way we do our scheduling and we think about our business?
Yeah, I think that businesses, particularly as they're finding it's harder to get enough workers, they are starting to be a little bit more flexible and thinking about, okay, so this is what we originally wanted, but that's not going to work. So how can we figure out a way to be more flexible and more creative, whether it's changing the hours, doing a work share? And that, I think, looking at some of those harder to employ or underemployed populations is really becoming very key for a lot of sectors.
Jeff, thanks for your call. We have a tweet from John. If you want to increase employment in Maine, businesses should pay higher wages. Problem solved.
Well, I do think we are seeing some evidence that wages are starting to increase as a result of this worker shortage. I think that there are a number of businesses that have made public announcements about having a higher starting wage because they need workers. And sure enough, that's the way to get them. It's not the only answer, but it is absolutely one of the pieces of the puzzle.
Employers are also starting to look at what does that package look like that makes them an employer of choice. You know, and I know some folks up in the Bar Harbor area are posting their job schedules ahead of time so that sometimes people may want to work more hours at different places. And if they have a predictable schedule, they're able to arrange their childcare and juggle some, multiple employment places.
I know that there, even the quick service restaurants, the fast food restaurants, are no longer even fighting minimum wage type legislation or anything like that. Particularly McDonald's was publicly out with that. They're off that because they just need the employees, and they will. They're not worried about the pay. They obviously they have a limit of what they can pay for a young person coming into a McDonald's. But ultimately, in things like that, then you get look at automation and artificial intelligence and things that change, you know, in terms of if people get priced too high. But I do think that, you know, the job picture and the wage rates are definitely up with at the same time.
An email from Michael. We've read about the shortage of amateur sports officials because people don't want to be abused by parents, coaches, and fans. Do you think the same dynamics are at play in finding workers for certain public-facing jobs and industries? Interesting question. Do people not want to have to work with the public right now?
Boy, that's
I've not
that's
heard.
That is an interesting question. I think that the idea of needing to have a certain level of civility is perhaps a concept at this stage of the game that if you have your pick of jobs, you're probably going to be more likely to choose something where you're going to feel more comfortable. I don't know.
Maybe there's something to that. Well, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. We're talking about the workforce shortage. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Invisible Fence of Southern Maine, who understand the importance of keeping pets happy, healthy, and safe at home. InvisibleFence.com. And New England Forestry Foundation, celebrating 75 years of conserving forests for future generations. Learn more at NewEnglandForestry.org.
Coming up on the next Commonwealth Club program... For the past 6 months, the U.S. Department of Defense has been without clear leadership, even as crises developed with North Korea and Iran. Join us for an in-depth conversation with former Secretary of Defense Ash Carter as we go inside the Pentagon on the next Commonwealth Club radio program.
Coming up shortly after Maine Calling at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. July 20th, this Saturday, marks the 50-year anniversary since Apollo 11 landed on the moon. And tonight at 8 o'clock, Maine Public Television offers you another chance to watch Chasing the Moon, American Experience, that chronicles the space race with the Soviet Union and the failures and successes of the Apollo program. Then at 10 o'clock tonight, it's Nova and Apollo's Daring Mission, which takes a close look at Apollo 8, the first manned spacecraft to orbit the moon, and includes both Apollo engineers and astronauts. All this week, Maine Public Television has many special moon landing related programming. To see the complete schedule, please visit mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what can be done to address Maine's labor shortage? My guests are Steve Hewins, President and CEO of Hospitality Maine, Maine Department of Labor Commissioner Laura Fortman, and Maine State Economist Amanda Rector. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Amanda, there's a long-term plan in the works, isn't there? Please say yes.
There is, yes. We're working on a plan, a 10-year economic strategy for the state, and we're working in collaboration not just across different agencies to develop this, but also with public sector nonprofits, with private agencies, private businesses. The idea being that we really do need to have a good game plan going forward so that we can make Maine a more sustainable economy in the long run. And so we are addressing things like how do we grow the workforce? How do we increase the value add per worker so that we can have a stronger economy overall? How do we equitably grow average wages so that people are able to make a better living within the state? And so we're developing this. We have a report due to the governor in November. So stay tuned for solutions from that. But I think as we roll it out, it's going to be a really important living document, because our intention is that this is something that we are revisiting all the time to make sure that we are using it as a framework for development choices going forward so that we are all hopefully working together to make Maine a better place.
Yeah, and the only thing I'd like to add to that is, of course, you know, the Department of Labor is involved in that process, but we're going to take that finished economic development plan and we're using that to marry it with the workforce development plan that the State Workforce Board is developing. So as Amanda said, it will be a living document. It will be, you know, a deep dive into both the economic development strategies and the workforce strategies and marrying all of those together.
We'll go to Maura, who is calling from Falmouth. Hi, Maura. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to mention that my daughter has Down syndrome, and we were camping at Mount Blue Campground, and someone was going around in a golf cart changing toilet paper and cleaning restrooms and everything. I thought, wow, that's something that she could do as an adult. And I'm wondering if there's a way to look at those job descriptions and put more discrete skills and then forward that to the school system so they can be working on this for populations like my daughter, kids with special needs who are physically able but may need training on specific skills. Also, I worked in a campground for my parents and I cleaned the restroom, so I know what that was like. It's not glamorous, but it's work. Anyway, that's my comment. Thank you.
Sure. And that's exactly the kind of work that we're doing at the Bureau of Vocational Rehabilitation Services. Our folks reach into the schools. We start working with young people at the age of 14 so that there can be a plan, a job, an employment plan available for them, and that we would come up with a number of work experiences before they're 18 so that they get to try out a variety of occupations and find one that meets their aspirations and their skills and a path forward that, you know, can include additional education or particular training.
We'll go to Wayne, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to emphasize what your tweeter mentioned, which is that wages are really the key issue here. Because, you know, in any market, if there's a shortage of either supply or demand, it's because the price is not set right. And employers, especially in the service industry, are expecting people to take wages that they can't possibly live on because costs are much too high. So unless something is going to be offered that's considerably above minimum wage, it's really not possible for people to live on service industry wages.
Yes, I would respectfully dispute that in two ways. One is that I think in Maine, the unique problem is we don't have enough people here working. So it's not even a question of people not being coming into the industry. We just can't find the people to fill positions. But I also want to make sure that people understand that the hospitality or the service sectors aren't all low-paying jobs. I mean, and that's one thing we as an industry have to do a better job of explaining the opportunities and the careers that are available. It isn't just, you know, let's say servers or housekeeping or things that or that type of work that exists, of course. It's very important to the operations. But the careers in this industry are pretty well-developed and long-term and good money, too. So I think as an industry, we need to do a better job of helping people understand the career paths that exist, and so that won't be an issue going forward.
But, Steve, to Wayne's first point, if housekeeping workers were paid $25 an hour, would hotels have a shortage?
There wouldn't be any hotels, probably. But other than that, I think that's an opportunity for some of the populations that don't have jobs. You know, we talk about new Americans or immigrants and people that are entering the workforce. One of the most difficult things there is the language barrier, you know, and we're pushing an initiative, which we're just starting on, to try to have English for hospitality so we can get people to be able to speak the language of hospitality in order to get them into the workforce and fill some of these positions they may be able to qualify for from where they come from, but at least it gets them into the workforce and then they can move on from there. So, you know, we have needs at all levels and it takes all different types of people, and not every job is meant to be a, you know, to feed a family of four, let's say. There are all types of jobs available for all types of personal needs that people have.
Wayne, thanks for your call. We're going to move on to Dylan, who's calling from Pittsfield. Hi, Dylan. Go ahead.
Yes, ma'am. How you doing? I just want to touch base on something. I moved up here from Rhode Island. I moved my family up here to work at Bath Iron Works. It's a wonderful place to work, to be honest with you. And it's a shipyard that will hire people if you can pass a car test and you have a relatively clean background. People of all ages work there, and people from all over the world work in shipyards. And they are on the job training. They will pay you to learn the trades, and you can definitely move forward and really support your family and have a good career there. I pay my bills. I can take care of my family. I'm a single family income, and I have no problems at all living in Maine, working at Bath Iron Works. I just wanted to put that out there.
Dylan, thanks so much for calling in. Can I ask you how you found out about the job at Bath Iron Works?
Well, to be honest with you, I was already in a trade previously for quite a number of years, and I was a contractor, and I moved up here to work at Washburn Dottie at first. And then from there, because of the wages, Bath Iron Works pays a lot better. They have more opportunity to move forward and move up in the industry. I started off as a ship fitter, and I moved to the welding department and so on, and now I'm a supervisor. So there's plenty of opportunity for anybody who wants to work, who's willing to learn. And like I said, they pay you to learn. So, I mean, if you're willing to do the job, they're willing to pay you for it.
Dylan, thanks so much for your call and sharing your story. We have an email from Douglas. The entire premise of your program seems flawed. Any basic economics student could tell you that there's almost never a worker shortage. North Dakota has the lowest unemployment rate in the nation during the Great Recession because an oil boom generated many high-paying jobs that drew thousands of people into areas with basically no housing. People flocked in from all over the country and lived in RVs, vans, shared motel rooms, and tents. If you can't find enough workers for your business, you are not offering high enough wages for the working conditions at your business. If you cannot raise offered wages to attract enough workers, you do not have a viable business model. Amanda, you're the economist.
Yeah, so I think certainly wages are a piece of it. And I think that the thing to keep in mind is that it's not an instantaneous adjustment to the labor force conditions. And there's a sweet spot between what the business can afford and what workers are willing to work for. So there are a lot of different things going on there. On top of that are all of the decisions that someone makes around the other aspects of their livelihood beyond just what the job pays, but what is the tax situation? What is the housing availability? Is there internet where I'm going to potentially be living? Is there childcare? Do I have family connections to the area? It's a very, the decision to move somewhere and take a job is a very, very complicated one. We certainly, if we knew exactly what the one thing was to fix the economy and bring lots of workers to the state, we probably would have already done that. And I think other states and other countries are facing a similar situation where there's more and more of the baby boomers who are moving into retirement age and smaller populations that are following. So we're all sort of fighting over this limited pool of workers. And so we're reaching the point where we do need to be creative about not just how are we attracting more, but how are we fully utilizing the available workers that we do have here. And there are a lot of different moving pieces to that. So I think it's not as straightforward as increase wages.
An email from Veronica. My daughter worked retail and was only given limited and inconsistent hours, and scheduled days always changed, making it impossible for her to get a second job that she desperately wanted. Stephen, this is what you're talking about, some of the businesses in Bar Harbor doing proactively, making that not the case so that people can be have a better idea of what their week is going to look like and work maybe a second job.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think everybody needs some consistency for what they're doing so they can prepare their life around it so their job doesn't revolve around everything. But, you know, the industry has got a lot of different hours than, you know, standard 9-to-5 type jobs. So it's a different kind of piece there. But, you know, I think there are a lot of people that want to work in the industry part time, too. There's a big element of that where they don't really want 40 or plus hours a week. They're only looking for 30 and working different shifts and that sort of thing.
We'll go to Sharon, who's calling from Harpswell. Hi, Sharon. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question regarding the strategic plan. I wondered if There's some education happening for employers. There's a lot of discussion about trying to fill a skills gap, but I think there's a gap in what employers' perceptions. For example, the BIW, the person who called about BIW, they were talking about a company here that is willing to train their employees and that they look for employees that have soft skills. And I think that many small employers are looking for a specific employee and maybe their wages aren't matching what a person's skills have. But if there's some education that can happen to these employers about flexibility and, transferability.
Yeah, I think certainly we're working closely with the business community as we develop this plan to help understand not just what their needs are, but also help them to understand what the needs of the workers are. And I do think that that is increasingly becoming evident to businesses that they are going to have to be a little bit more creative and maybe think a little bit differently about not only how they structured the positions, but also the type of people who might be available to fill those positions.
One thing about the hospitality industry is it's really small businesses, primarily all small businesses, which they often don't have the resources to provide the training like a Bath Iron Works or a Chimbro might do. And that's a struggle we face as small business owners across the state.
But that's why I think it's so exciting that you have moved to an apprenticeship model, because that is a learn while you earn, and there is a graduated pay scale, too, so that as you're acquiring more skills, you're also receiving additional pay. And I just want to say that, the Department of Labor, we get phone calls all the time from businesses, and they would say, oh, well, we need 50 employees or 25 employees. And it's not as though there's a back room somewhere where we keep these folks. So part of the conversation that we have is exactly what Amanda was saying. It's like, let's look at that job description. Is there any flexibility there? Is there anything that's not only going to help you recruit employees, but retain them? Because that's the other thing as well, is that we want to make sure that, businesses don't have that turnover.
All right. Well, Sharon, you're our last call today. Thank you so much to our guests. I apologize to everyone we left hanging. So many people wanted to have their voice heard today. It's such an important issue. Thank you to Amanda Rector, the Maine State Economist, Laura Fortman, Commissioner of the Maine Department of Labor, and Steve Hewins, President and CEO of Hospitality Maine. Sandra Harris ran the board today. We had additional technical help from Dan Works. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as helpful links and resources at mainecalling.org. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. And for those of you in the Millinocket area, do not forget we will be bringing the show to the North Light Gallery on Thursday. We'll be talking about the Katahdin Woods and Waters National Monument. And immediately following Maine Calling, we will have a Tell Me More tour community discussion. We hope to see you there. It's free. Please visit the Maine Public website for more information. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.